The Detroit House of Comedy is a new venue that opened earlier this summer for stand-up in downtown Detroit. It's inside the Hockey Town Cafe, where Second City Detroit used to be at the Old City Theater. I always wondered, why aren't people using this black box theater? I've always been a big fan of it. Well, now they're finally turning it into something new. Detroit House of Comedy, adding to this growing ecosystem of comedy here in Detroit. And tonight and tomorrow, you can see undoubtedly one of the funniest stand-up comics working today. She is in town. Two shows tonight, two shows tomorrow at the Detroit House of Comedy. Her name is Jessica Kearson, and she joins us live on Culture Shift right now. Hello, Jessica.
Hi. It's so good to be here.
I saw you last night. You blew my mind. I'm still hurting from laughing too much. And I think I was laughing too much because you kept looking over at my section. But I think you want laughs, right? That's kind of the point.
Yeah. I mean, you weren't laughing too much. There's never enough laughter. I mean, even though nothing will ever fill the hole, my empty hole of sadness that wasn't filled when I was a child. But I did hear your table laughing a lot, and it made me so happy. Your table made me very happy.
Yeah, we really wanted to bring it. Big fans of yours. Happy to have you in Detroit. I don't think you've played Detroit very often.
No, not often, but I have played it. Not in a long time because, you know, there's so many clubs in the country and you play the same clubs over and over every year and there's only so many weekends in the year. So, but I love being back and the crowd was so much fun last night and it was great.
You're a staple in New York. If you go to New York, you're at the Comedy Cellar, you're at these legendary comedy clubs, mm-hmm. and you're performing, 15, 20 times in a single week in New York City? Can you talk a little bit about that ecosystem of hustling in New York City in the stand-up comedy scene?
Yeah, well, excuse me. I did that for years. And if I'm in the city for the week, I'll do that. But now I'm on the road so much. So, you know, I'll do more like 5-6 shows in a weekend. And then if I'm home, I'll do some shows in New York. But for years and years and years, I did 10, 15, 20 shows in a week. And that's how you get good. And in New York, there's that much stage time. And you really can't get that much stage time anywhere. I mean, there are cities you can get a lot of stage time, like LA and Boston, Chicago, but not that. It's like there are so many shows and so many clubs in New York. It's insane.
Yeah. But you still have to break in, even though there's all these opportunities, there's a lot of competition.
Yeah, you have to be good. You got to be good. And you got to be a good business person. You have to be a schmoozer. And I would go up anywhere. When I first started, I performed in a laundromat on 7th Avenue every Wednesday. There would be like two people folding laundry and a homeless person. I mean, this is not a joke. There would be like a little amp, like a little Radio Shack amp. And I would just tell Joe, no one would be paying attention. I performed in a donut shop. I performed in a little supermarket. I like that, you know, you could get stuff from the salad bar. Like that's what we got, like just a little salad. I performed in bars in front of drunk people all the time. I performed in a deli. This is no joke. Every night I would stand outside and give out flyers and just be like, come to the show, just do anything to get on stage for years. And I would drive all over, you know, hours away to just get like a dinner, to just get 7 minutes of stage time. And, you know, you would pay money to get stage time. I mean, now, you know, it's very different now. A lot of comics don't do that. They don't, they don't work as hard now. And it's, I feel like it really got me to where I am and it got me really good a lot quicker because I worked hard for it.
That's such a classic stand-up comedy story, right? The laundromats, the bad gigs.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to believe that you would persevere through that because it doesn't sound charming or fun or rewarding. What was still driving you to keep doing it even though these gigs were sounding miserable? Like, what was that for you?
Well, there's a couple things. First of all, I had a network of friends that I did it with who were hysterically funny and fun to be around. And to watch them do these gigs was, I mean, it was so much entertainment to watch my funny friends do these gigs with me because I would just die laughing watching my friends perform in these horrible situations. And I had that camaraderie. I had, you know, that family with me. Number two, it felt horrible and it was horrible. And I'm very comfortable with that because I love being miserable. So I would never be doing this for a living if I didn't love feeling miserable because I would not be sitting here if everything were okay. I mean, this is, you cannot be a comedian if you're not, if you're okay. I teach comedy to women and I've had a couple women come into my class and be like, hi, I'm ready for the class. And I'm like, I'm giving you your money back because you are too healthy. You are too okay. You need to go through a horrible breakup or like lose all your money or something horrific needs to happen to you. And then you can take my class. Like you're well and you can't be a comic. So, I'm a hard worker. I am like, I grew up with parents who are like really hard workers and excuse me. And they taught me how to work hard and I just bust it. Like I've been like that the whole time I've been doing it. I just was brought up that way. I'm a workaholic. So it was comfortable for me to just run from gig to gig to gig and keep working. And yeah, you know, I'm not lazy. I'm just not.
And it has obviously paid off. You're on the road a lot. You're getting booked. I mean, when you are in New York, it does seem like you're really beloved. The phrase comic gets used a lot, but I've seen you in New York and I've seen how the comics interact with you.
Yeah.
It just seems like you've got, I don't know, a presence about you. Have you noticed that? I mean, that feeling arriving, I guess?
Yes. Yes. I've worked very hard on my... how people see me and my reputation. I've treated people very well the whole time I've been doing stand up, and I have a very good reputation, and I am seen as a comics comic, and I am kind of like the mom with a lot of the male comics. They, you know, a lot of the guys see me as like, it's funny. I'm married to a woman and, they love it. Cause they show me pictures of women that like, I'm like the girl, dude, guy, friend. Like it's hilarious. Cause they all talk to me about women and they love it. They love hanging out with me. They show me pictures. Like they send me
like,
inappropriate.
Jessica, what do you think about this?
Yeah. It's not great. Sometimes I'm like, that's pushing it. And I really don't need to see that picture. That's a lot, you know, but I have very, I'm like the sister, the mom, the aunt, like with all these comics. And I think because I've worked so hard to treat people well and I help people a lot and I don't help them so that they'll help me. I'm so grateful for the career I've had. And I really want to help people, and it's come back to me tenfold. It really has. And I don't ask for anything back, but I know how hard it's been for me in this business and how much rejection I've had. And I really want to help people so that they don't have to go through what I've been through. Mm-hmm. And things just come to me. And I think because of that, it's like you put good energy out there and things come to you. Like, for example, Bill Burr, you know, I was telling you before we started this, like Bill Burr has helped me so much. I mean, he called me out of the blue one day and was like, I want to produce your 1 hour comedy special. I got a deal with Comedy Central. Out of the blue, he called me. He's like, you're a killer. You should have a special. And I was like, wow. And then he called me, you know, whatever, 6 months ago and was like, I'm doing a special for Netflix. I want you to be on it. And I was like, again, you're giving me another opportunity. I mean, it's just... You know, and he's doing for comics what I've always done for comics, because it's not fun if you don't share it. It's I don't know. And there's so many comics that don't, you know, there's so many comics that do. But there are so many comics who are so selfish and I don't know how they find pleasure in it. It's like, how much is enough? You have millions of dollars. You sell out theaters. You sell out stadiums, and you really don't help a lot of people. It's just incredible to me. Yeah. It's so I will never be that person. And people know that, and I think I am beloved for the reason that I help a lot of people.
Well, the other thing with the comic thing is your delivery, your stage presence.
Yeah.
I can't tell when you are completely just riffing off the cuff and when it's prepared material, and it's so smooth in between those two things, and you have this fantastic maneuver, the internal monologue that you share with the audience, where you're kind of like, I don't even know if this is working. I don't want to be here. Can you talk to me about your style?
Yeah, I find and I feel and always have since day one that you have to be completely real and honest and genuine on stage. If I'm not, then I can't do comedy because I just I couldn't do it. I don't know how people go on stage and if it's not going well, just continue to tell jokes. It is so crazy to me. I get that a lot of people do that, but I couldn't do it. Like, it's just, I would feel like such a liar, and I would have to run off the stage. Like, I have to address what's going on in front of me, and I have to address what's going on in my head. I mean, it's like, if I'm having anxiety, if some guy is just going like this and shaking his head at me, if someone's like coughing uncontrollably, I just have to address what's going on because it's real. It's what's happening. And I'm anxious and I'm in my head 24 hours. Do you know I wake up every morning and my head is going? There is not 1 second when my head is, unless I'm talking. And a lot of times when I'm talking, I'm thinking and talking to myself and it's negative. It's never positive unless I'm literally consciously saying, have a positive thought right now. I woke up this morning and I'm like, you're going to have a hard time today. It's really going to be a horrible day. It's going to be hot. You have to go do radio. Ugh, I don't feel good. Why am I feeling sick? I didn't even eat a lot last night. Oh my God, what if I have to go to the bathroom? What if I'm going to have diarrhea during the radio and I'm going to have to, oh God, I have to work out, but I don't want to work out. Why does my knee hurt? My knee is in so much pain right now. I have bad knees. I've lost so much weight. You haven't lost enough weight. Why are you still fat? You're probably gain weight. You're going to gain weight all weekend. You know what? Just eat everything. You're not even worth it. You used to have a pretty face and now your eyes are disgusting. You have baggy eye. And this is what goes on all day. So if I'm doing that on stage, I have to get it out of my head or else I'm going to bomb. And I'm so self-involved. What I just did, I'm a selfish, self-involved, disgusting person. Like, I'm in my head. That's being self-involved. I'm self-obsessed. Not even self-involved. I'm obsessed with myself. So So when you're a stand-up, you have to be present. So if I don't get it out and talk about it, I'm not present. I'm not even there.
But it's like, it's so clever. It's like the ultimate defense mechanism,
right?
To just be able to have this thing where you could be commenting on what's happening live in front of you.
Right.
Which I don't see anyone else do.
They don't. And you know what? People laugh so hard because see how you were just laughing? We all do it.
Right.
Except for people who are so unaware. Don't you wish you were one of those people who is like, what? What's going on? The country's fine. Everything's fine. What is everyone so upset about? Do you want to go get a milkshake? Like, I am so jealous of those people. There are people, you know, there's people like that who are like, what's going on? Oh my God. Do you want to go to the mall? Like, they have no idea that the world is ending. They're like, who's racist? What?
I think Tia Graham's about to die in the studio from laughing.
People aren't racist. What? What do you mean? They're literally dumb and clueless. And I see everything.
You're very observant.
Oh my God.
It with
well,
your
the,
eyes.
Most comic. You. I don't know one comic who's not observed. I mean, I'm sorry. Like, yeah.
Oh, God. She's going to start doing the internal monologue live.
It's going to be fine. You'll get to the toilet soon.
What is this guy saying to me right now?
Yeah.
You, speaking of idiots that you mentioned, you did a bit last night where you're overhearing a conversation between two TikTok influencers, which dives into the great mimic work and voice work that you also do.
What do you mean? Like this one?
Yes.
Seriously? Like my video did not even do well and like the lighting was amazing. Who cares about the virus? So what? There's a war. It's not here. It's not our children being blown up. Do I look okay?
Oh,
do you
want to
go to Sephora? Who cares about monkeypox? Does my makeup look okay?
Oh, there's also... there's also... The older Jewish woman that you do.
I understand you're a comedian. What does your husband think of it?
Oh.
Your poor children.
Oh. I'm sorry.
Are they okay? The mother's a clown.
Jessica Kearson live in studio with us right now. She's performing tonight, two shows at the Detroit House of Comedy. Also tomorrow night, two shows at the Detroit House of Comedy. One of my absolute favorite comedians. I don't think anyone's ever cracked me up this much on air before. Okay, let's
hopefully
dial it
11
up.
People will come.
That's the culture shift difference. Comedians on air, you're gonna see an increase of 1 to 1.5% in ticket sales.
Yeah,
it's one of the best shows people could see. I really could not undersell Jessica Kearson.
One person, I heard you on NPR and I thought I'd come check out the show. You better be funny.
That is
is it my turn to bowl?
Jessica, you once were quoted as saying it's hard enough to be a comedian, then you add another layer being a woman.
Yeah.
That's one thing that's been huge for you is trying to elevate female voices in comedy. You actually made an entire documentary about it called Hysterical, which people can watch on Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that important to you?
Well, first of all, being a comic for anyone is incredibly difficult. I mean, you're a man, a woman, it's unbelievably hard. And then as a female comic, forget it. I mean, there's this saying, women aren't funny. I don't know who made it up or who's with Jerry Lewis, whoever the hell said it first. But it's so not true. I mean, there's so many, it's not even because I'm a woman saying, I mean, so many men say this too. Male comics say it all the time. There's so many funny female comics. And it's like saying, you know, just a blanket statement that is just, it's like saying something, it's race. It's just, it's not true. And the truth is I think that when a woman's funny, I don't think I know, when a woman's funny, it's she's powerful, right? It's a very powerful thing to be funny. I noticed that at a very young age. When I was very young, I noticed that when I made people laugh, it was powerful. And I could make friends that way. I could maneuver things. I could manipulate people by being funny. And I could make them not bully me. I could, there was a lot of things I could do by being funny. And I see it on stage, you know, it's a powerful feeling to make people laugh. And people are threatened by that when a woman is funny. Men and women, not just men. And so anyway, I got involved with this project in New York City. An advertising agency saw me do stand-up. They wanted to do a project about a film, a small little thing about female comics, and document it. And it didn't end up happening. But I ended up bringing it with my manager at the time to FX, and they loved the idea of doing a documentary about female comics. And to make a very long story short, we made it. We made this documentary called Hysterical, which is a play on words, because women are always called hysterical. And it's incredible. And there's Margaret Cho's in it, Kathy Griffin, Eliza Schlesinger, Nikki Glaser, Fortune Feimster, Sherry Shepherd. It's all about female comics and all about our lives. And it's incredible. And it's now on Hulu and people should watch it. And now I'm in the process of making another one about female comics around the world. And Soleil Moon Frye is going to direct it, Punky Brewster. And during COVID, I actually interviewed like 10 female comics around the world on Zoom. And I got to tell you, I mean, these female comics, like the only female comic in Jordan, I interviewed someone in Abu Dhabi and like all over the world, and they don't have freedom of speech, a lot of them. And they have to sign paperwork. They have military show up to their shows. You can't even imagine. It is so fascinating. Like a lot of the things are similar in, you know, with female comics here, like touring, our safety issues, how we're treated by the audience, how we're treated by the men, by the bookers. But some things are completely different because we have freedom of speech here.
Right.
It's so interesting. So the goal is for me to travel with Soleil and go to these countries and interview these comics, and then for me to perform with them, so and do like an Anthony Bourdain kind of thing, which is I cannot wait to do. And it's just it's unbelievable, you know, how I take for granted. I'll speak for myself how free I am here, because some of these women, I mean, they can't talk about the royal family, the government, sex, their relationships. There's a lot of things that a lot of them are banned from talking about on stage.
Here, you've made the point that, you know, you're not signing a contract. There's not military, you know, dictating what you're saying, but there is societal policing of that people want to, you know, you had this quote where you say, if I talk about my experience as a lesbian or I talk about being Jewish and then someone gets offended, it's never even a lesbian or someone who's Jewish. It's usually a straight young white girl who's very liberal who gets upset.
Yeah, I love that you saw that somewhere, because that's very true. No, a Jewish person never gets upset about me talking of making fun of Jewish people. I mean, ever. Jewish people, we laugh at everything. I mean, like, I'm sure one person has gotten offended. I talk about being Jewish in every single show. We are able to laugh at ourselves. I mean, you have to be able to laugh at yourself. What happens is that I feel like other people get offended for us. It's like, it's so frustrating. It happens on TikTok all the time. I'll post a video. It's like people are dying laughing. The comments are like over and over again, this is amazing, this is hilarious. And then it's always the same type of person that the comment is like, this is racist, this is anti-Semitic. I'm like, anti-Semitic? I'm a proud Jewish person. Like, are you out of your mind? Like, how can don't call me anti-Semitic. That's the most insane thing. Or saying I'm being homophobic when I'm married to a woman and I have four daughters with a woman. I'm homophobic? Like, are you kidding me? I'm literally, I paved the way. I came out 27 years ago. Like, I've marched for your right. Like, you're a 20-year-old quote unquote queer person because you kissed a girl once. Like, I couldn't even hold hands with the person I loved and walk down the street because it was unsafe. I had a wedding, a gay wedding, and I have children. Like, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, it's just, I get that some people are truly offended, but I don't, I get upset for people when people voice their opinion because they have their own guilt or their own issues that they need to work out in therapy because of their own stuff. And they're sticking up for people who are not asking them to stick up for them. And also, it's like, it happens a lot when I talk about my weight stuff, because I've struggled with food and weight my whole life. I've lost a lot of weight. I've lost like 130 pounds. And when I talk about my weight stuff, a lot of times there's young women who go, and they get upset. And I'm like, you're upset about your own body and your own weight issues. You need to go talk to someone because I'm fine with it. I'm making fun of my history and myself. And you're getting upset. And because they'll comment also, this is horrible that you're making fun of yourself. I'm like, no, what's horrible is that you hate your own body and that you have issues with your body and you need to talk to someone about it. I love the way I look now and I'm really okay with it. And I can laugh at what I used to do and I can laugh. I can look back at it and make it funny. Like I'm okay with it.
I think that's probably the reason why comedy becomes ground zero for so much targeting about this in terms of the language and things that people are talking about. Another quote that you had, we're saying everything that people want to say, but they can't. People can't go into their jobs and say the things that I'm saying right on stage. They'd get fired that day. But you started in 1999. Now it's 2022. I mean, have you noticed that change?
Oh,
is it way worse now in terms of people trying to police or call you out for things that you're saying on stage?
Are you kidding me? In the beginning, I could say anything. There were no limit. I could say anything I wanted and no one thought any. The point is, when I would go on stage when I first started, and for years, not even just when I first started, you told a joke and people laughed. Told a joke, people laughed. Now there's a pause. People think. Mm-hmm. So some people will just laugh, but a lot of people are in their heads. So there's this. Now there's like this, a lot of people look around, they make sure other people are laughing. It's not as instant anymore. And there's a tension sometimes in the audience. And there's a different energy in the crowd. Sometimes it's great. People are just laughing right, and it's instant. But a lot of times, and it depends where you are in the country. It depends what city you're in. You know, some places it's more uptight.
Right.
And some places it's more instant laughs and it's the energy's great. But it's hard in some places. It was much harder during the political stuff and the elections. It was horrible for me during that time because it was very divided and people were much more tense. But now it's calmed down a lot.
I always say, you know, the way the world is right now, getting out there and laughing is probably one of the best things you can do and just let go of whatever you're hanging on to and just kind of enjoy. Like, you don't have to police yourself for at least 2 hours. You don't need to think about anything. You're in a dark room laughing with other people and no one's going to judge you.
Yeah.
So Jessica, as we start to wrap up here, again, two shows tonight at the Detroit House of Comedy, two shows tomorrow. That's Saturday night, Detroit House of Comedy with Jessica Kearson. What can people expect?
Well, I'm just silly on stage, and there's, you know, just come laugh. Men laugh at me. Women laugh at me. It's just really silly. I do a lot of characters, and it's very in the moment, and you really just come out and laugh. Don't stay home. Just do it. It's fun. You can watch my clips on TikTok and check me out before you come to the show. And yeah, I love being here. I love being in Detroit. And thank you so much for having me.
Absolute pleasure. A massive fan. Saw Jessica last night. It was one of the best shows I've ever seen. I cannot recommend going to see her enough. Again, two shows tonight and tomorrow at Detroit House of Comedy downtown. New comedy club. Can we get one more farewell from the old Jewish lady?
I'll see you at the show, and if I have gas, just if you see me, my name is Vivian Eisenstein. I'll have on a bright silver shirt, and I have white hair, and just don't sit near me because I'm going to eat a lot of prunes, and I may have gas. So long. Goodbye.
Jessica Kearson, everybody, here on Culture Shift.